Welcome to Akatsha Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatsha AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're tackling a really significant work of modern Chinese literature, Yu Hua's 1993 novel, To Live, that's Huzhe in Chinese.
Mm.
Now, if you've encountered this book, you'll know it can be, well, a pretty grueling read. It follows one man through just a relentless series of personal tragedies.
Yeah, absolutely. And all set against some of the most turbulent political periods of the 20th century in China.
Exactly. I mean, how does a story about losing, well, everything, your wealth, your status, your land, and eventually every single member of your family, how does that become this profound affirmation of life, of just the wrong will to keep going?
That's the question. So our mission today, for you listening, is to unpack Fugui's story, the main character, and try to understand what his survival against all odds can teach us. Okay, so maybe let's set the scene a bit. Talk about the author and the history.
Good idea. Yu Hua, born in 1960, he's a major figure. He actually started out as a dentist, believe it or not, before turning to writing.
Right, and his early stuff in the 80s was quite different, wasn't it?
Yeah.
More experimental, avant-garde.
Yeah, fragmented, pushing boundaries. But To Live in 93 was a real shift. He moved towards a more accessible realist style. It's a novel that really puts a human face on these huge, abstract historical events.
And you can't separate the story from that history. It's woven right in. Mm-hmm. Fugui lives through the Chinese Civil War, then the land reform, the Great Leap Forward, and the famine.
A cultural revolution.
Exactly. He sees it all. He's like the ultimate witness.
Yeah.
But the way the novel introduces this epic scale of suffering is remarkably simple, almost quiet.
You mean the frame story at the beginning?
Yeah, that opening scene is just an unnamed narrator, a folk song collector, who stumbles upon this very old man out plowing a field.
It's incredibly evocative, that image.
It is. The sheer kind of weathered simplicity. This old man, Fugui, clearly ancient, exhausted, working side by side with his equally old ox.
And the detail about the name?
Right. That's the kicker. The narrator overhears Fugui Do talking to the ox, calling it by his own name, Fugui, which ironically means wealth and honor.
So that simple image, this old man and his ox sharing the burden, that becomes the lens for this whole devastating story we're about to hear.
Precisely. The old man we meet is the result of everything he's endured.
Okay, so let's rewind. Let's talk about Fugui at the beginning, because the old farmer we meet is, well, the complete opposite of his younger self, right? How is he first presented?
Oh, he starts out as the classic spoiled rich kid.
Yeah.
The arrogant, reckless son of a wealthy landlord. His early life is just self-destruction.
Gambling.
Compulsive gambling. Visiting brothels. Totally neglecting his loyal wife, Jiazhen, who's pregnant at the time and just enduring it all. He's really quite awful.
And this addiction leads to the first major catastrophe.
It does. It's the turning point. He gets caught in a rigged game with this cunning gambler, Longer, and he loses everything.
Everything.
The family mansion, the ancestral home, and 100 acres of prime land. Gone. Just like that. The shock is so great, it actually kills his father.
Wow. So the family is ruined. They fall right down the social ladder.
Instantly. They become landless peasants. Destitute.
And here's where that central irony kicks in, the one you mentioned earlier, this absolute personal disaster, losing everything he valued.
Becomes the very thing that saves his life. It's an incredible twist.
Explain that for us. How does losing the land save him?
Well, think about the timing. Soon after, the communists win the Civil War and the land reform movement begins. Landlords were targeted, their property seized, many were publicly denounced, even executed.
Like Longer, the man who won his land.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Longer, having become a landlord through Fugui's gambling, meets that fate.
Yeah.
But Fugui, because he'd already lost everything and become a peasant, he was spared. His ruinous gambling habit inadvertently saved him from political execution.
So his greatest failing becomes his salvation. That says something profound about fate and history in this novel, doesn't it?
It really does. It suggests that these huge historical forces are almost arbitrary. That survival might have less to do with virtue or planning and more with, well, sheer unpredictable luck.
Right. It undermines any sense of simple cause and effect or justice. His moral failing saved him. It's a complex starting point.
And no sooner has he hit bottom personally than the national chaos just sweeps him up. He tries to start this new life as a peasant, but history interferes immediately.
He gets drawn into the Civil War, right?
Forcibly conscripted, pulled right into the Nationalist Army, Chiang Kai-shek's side. He spends a couple of brutal years at the front.
What's the depiction of the war like? Is it about ideology?
Not really. It's portrayed more as just senseless violence, starvation, constant fear, sheer human suffering, detached from the politics. It's about survival, minute to minute.
And eventually his side loses.
Yeah, his unit is defeated and he's captured by the communist PLA, the People's Liberation Army. But here's another twist.
Because he's a peasant now.
Exactly. He fits the profile of the oppressed class they claim to liberate. So they actually release him pretty quickly. He gets to go home. Traumatized, yes, but alive.
But home isn't the refuge he might have hoped for. The losses kept piling up while he was gone.
Tragically, yes. He returns to find his mother has died in his absence.
Mm.
And, perhaps even more heartbreakingly, his daughter, Fengxia.
What happened to her?
Well, with Fugui gone and the family in extreme poverty, Jiazhen couldn't afford a doctor when Fengxia got a high fever. As a result, the fever left her permanently deaf and mute.
Oh, that's brutal. So that's the first real blow to the next generation, caused indirectly by war and poverty.
Yeah, a loss of potential, a loss of voice, literally. And then the land reform terror hits home again.
You mentioned Longer's fate.
Right. Fugui actually has to witness Longer, the man who took his family fortune, being publicly denounced and executed as a landlord.
How does he react?
It's described as this mixture of absolute terror, realizing that could easily have been him, and alongside it, this profound, almost guilty relief.
Because his own recklessness spared him that fate.
Yes.
It just hammers home that message again. History is chaotic. Survival feels random. You're just walking this tightrope. Yes. It just hammers home that message again.
Okay, so let's move into what many consider the real emotional core of the novel. The relentless impact on Fugui's children during the next major political campaigns. This is where it gets incredibly tough to read.
Yeah, this is where the cost of ideology on just ordinary, innocent lives becomes almost unbearable. We're entering the period of the Great Leap Forward now, starting around 1958.
Maybe briefly explain that for listeners.
Sure. It was Mao Zedong's ambitious and ultimately disastrous campaign to rapidly transform China's economy from agrarian to communist industrial society. It involved forced collectivization of farms, unrealistic production targets, even backyard steel furnaces.
And it led to utter economic collapse and the Great Chinese Famine.
Millions died.
Tens of millions. And the novel depicts this starkly. The family is starving.
Yeah.
Fugui, Jiazhen, the kids. They're reduced to eating tree bark, wild greens, anything they can find.
Yep.
And it's during this time of starvation that tragedy strikes their son, Youqing.
Youqing. He's such a good kid in the book. Dutiful, spirited. His death is, it's just senseless. It's one of the most devastating moments.
What happens?
He's a schoolboy. The wife of the local county magistrate is seriously ill and needs a blood transfusion urgently. So they round up kids from the school to donate blood.
Okay.
But the medical staff at the school or clinic, they're panicked, inexperienced, maybe politically pressured. They drain way too much blood from little Youqing. He just dies right there from blood loss.
Oh my God. Just negligence, prioritizing an official's wife.
Essentially, yes. It's portrayed as this awful mix of incompetence and the cruelty of the political hierarchy. A child's life sacrificed carelessly. And then comes the twist.
There's another layer.
There is. Fugui later finds out the county magistrate, whose wife Youqing died trying to save, is actually his old friend from the army, Chun Sheng.
Yeah, the man he served with.
The very same. Chun Sheng is ridden with guilt, tries to help Fugui later. But, I mean, how do you overcome something like that? It's an unbearable connection. Youqing's death is just this stark example of how political movements and the incompetence they can foster just crush individual lives.
And the suffering doesn't end there. It carries on into the Cultural Revolution in the mid-60s, doesn't it? And it claims Fengxia, his daughter.
Yes, poor Fengxia. She actually finds a measure of happiness, finally. She marries this really kind gentleman, a worker named Wan Erksi. It's a genuinely loving match.
Your moment of hope.
A real moment. They even have a son, Kugan. Fugui and Jiazhen become grandparents. You feel this little flicker of continuity of the future. But then Fengxia goes into labor. And this is the height of the Cultural Revolution. Chaos reigns. Experienced people, professionals like doctors, have been purged, denounced as counter-revolutionaries, sent away.
So the hospitals are affected.
Dramatically. The skilled doctors are gone. The hospital where Fengxia gives birth is staffed mainly by young, inexperienced Red Guard nurses, more political zealots than medical professionals.
And something goes wrong.
Fengxia suffers a postpartum hemorrhage, bleeding after childbirth. It's a manageable complication, usually. But the nurses panic. They don't know what to do. And she bleeds to death.
Destroyed by the political madness that dismantled the very institutions meant to save her.
Precisely. And that loss is the final blow for Jiazhen. Fugi's wife, who has been this pillar of quiet, stoic endurance through everything, she just breaks.
She's also physically unwell by this point, right?
Yeah, she has this degenerative bone disease. They call it soft bone disease. Already frail, losing Fengxia just shatters her completely. She dies soon after her daughter.
Leaving Fugui with just his son-in-law and grandson.
Just Erxie and little Kugan, his entire immediate family, gone.
Which brings us to this final, almost unbearable stripping away. He's lost his wife, both his children. How does the novel handle these last connections to the future? How does he end up the solitary figure we met at the start?
Well, the losses just keep coming. There's no respite. Erxie, the kind son-in-law.
What happens to him?
He works in construction. There's an accident on site. He's crushed by a load of falling cement slabs. Another senseless, almost random death.
Leaving Fugi alone with his grandson.
Yes. Fugi, the man who started as a wealthy heir, is now the sole provider and guardian for his young grandson, Kugan, who's about 7 years old.
Just the two of them left.
And then comes the final, most twisted irony. It's almost the cruelest death in the book because it happens not during famine, but when things are slightly better.
How does Kugan die?
Fugi wants to give the boy a treat. He manages to get some beans, cooks up a big pot for him. Kugan, who's known hunger, or the fear of it, his whole short life.
Mm-hmm.
He's so excited he eats the beans too fast, too greedily.
And he chokes.
He chokes to death on the beans.
Oh no. After surviving famine, he dies from a moment of relative abundance.
It's a devastating, perfect metaphor for the book's view of fate, isn't it? Completely arbitrary, cruel. There's no pattern, no reward for suffering. And with that, Fugui's entire bloodline is gone.
He is utterly alone.
Utterly alone, just him and the land. And it's after this, in this state of complete solitude, that he does something significant. He sees an old ox being led to slaughter.
The ox from the beginning.
Yes, an ox that's clearly old, worked to its limit, broken down. Much like Fugui himself, he feels a connection, buys the ox, saves it from death, and he names it Fugui.
Naming the ox after himself, what's the significance there?
I think the ox becomes his final companion, his mirror, his family, in a way. It represents that quiet dignity of hard labor, the connection to the earth that has outlasted everything, regimes, family, fortune.
Partners in survival.
Exactly. Partners in this simple, ongoing act of existence. By naming it Fugui, he's acknowledging their shared fate, their shared persistence. And as we saw in the opening, he talks to the ox. He tells it stories, keeps the memories of Jiazhen, Yoking, Fengxia, Kugan alive through his words, through the daily ritual of working the land together.
So survival itself becomes an act of remembering, of honoring the lost.
Yeah. Living becomes his way of keeping them with him.
So let's talk a bit about how Yuhua pulls this off, literally. How does he make all this suffering readable? How does he avoid it becoming just overwhelming melodrama?
It really comes down to his narrative style, his prose. It's remarkably simple on the surface, unadorned, very matter of fact.
He doesn't linger on the emotion.
Not explicitly. He'll describe a horrific event, a death, a tragedy, and then almost immediately move on to the practical consequences.
Yeah.
You know, burying the body, finding food, the logistics of survival.
It's quite spare, almost detached sometimes.
Exactly. And I think that detachment is key. It mirrors how people often cope with relentless drama. You compartmentalize, you focus on the next step, you just keep going.
Yeah.
By not telling the reader how to feel, by not layering on the melodrama,
he forces you, the reader, to supply the emotional weight yourself.
Precisely. And that makes the horror feel much deeper, much more authentic than if he'd spelled it all out. It's a very powerful, very controlled technique. Understatement makes the impact greater.
And that brings us back to the title, To Live. After everything Fugui endures, what is the novel ultimately saying about the meaning of living?
Well, it's clearly not about achieving happiness in the conventional sense, or accumulating wealth, or even leaving a legacy through descendants, because he loses all of that.
So what is it about?
It seems to be about the raw, almost instinctual obligation to simply persist, to endure, finding a kind of quiet dignity in the act of survival itself, regardless of the outcome.
He reevaluates everything, doesn't he?
He does. There's that moment he reflects on longer. The man who got rich but died terrified and alone. And Fugui thinks, essentially, your life wasn't worth as much as mine.
Why? Because Fugui experienced love, connection.
Exactly. Even though those connections brought immense grief, they gave his life a value that wealth couldn't. His life was filled with relationships, however painful their loss.
There's that line, something like, man lives for himself, the living should go on living. It sounds almost stark, but maybe it's an affirmation.
I think it is. It's an affirmation of existence itself, stripped bare of expectations. It's a kind of humble defiance against the crushing weight of fate and history.
So the message transcends the specific Chinese context.
Absolutely. While it's deeply rooted in that history, it speaks to a universal human capacity for resilience, for accepting the often arbitrary cruelty of life, and finding meaning in just carrying on. Su Gui doesn't conquer fate. He simply endures it, outlives it.
So in the end, to live seems to suggest that survival itself, that quiet persistence, is a kind of profound, unrecognized heroism.
Yeah, I think that's right. True strength isn't about what you achieve or gain, perhaps, but about what you can endure, what you can carry.
It really challenges our modern focus on, you know, happiness and fulfillment as the main goals of life.
It does. It suggests that maybe the simple capacity to continue and to hold on to the memory of those who mattered, maybe that's meaning enough, a different kind of fulfillment. So here's a final thought for you to consider. When we see Fugui at the end, finding that quiet, solitary peace with his ox, Fugui the ox, does the novel perhaps suggest that a life stripped bare by loss might actually reveal a simpler, maybe even deeper truth about what it means to exist, the sheer value of being alive, than a life constantly chasing success or happiness? So here's a final thought for you to consider. Mandatory closing line. So here's a final thought for you to consider. The conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.